Hey, listeners, on this week's show, we are diving back into the Spider-Verse with a spoiler-filled episode, and the film's directors join us for a conversation.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 265 of Real Blend, a podcast that wants to know, Kevin, are you aware of Jared Leto's favorite song by a Disney princess?
Wow, that's really deep.
Favorite song. Jared Leto, who you might have seen climbing on the side of a wall earlier this week in pop culture news. Jared was in Berlin and decided he was going to climb out to the outside of a hotel wall.
But he only climbed like 8 feet.
But in the process of this, shared with the media what his favorite Disney princess song was.
And this is before Jared let go.
Well, you're almost there.
Is it Jared Let It Go?
There you go, baby. Very nice.
I was like seriously going through. I was like, was there one about a wall? And I was like, no, that's Pink Floyd.
Just out of curiosity, why was Jared Leto climbing that wall?
It's because he's Jared Leto.
Apparently, you know, if we're going to ask why questions about Jared Leto, we got to go much further back than the wall. We got to go to Morbius. There's so many whys about Jared Leto we got to ask.
From what I understand, he climbs things during his concerts all the time as well, too.
Oh, so. Okay, dude, but like the drama of that moment was ruined when the camera pans out and you see the people walking on the street below him and you realize he's really only like 8 feet off the ground.
Yes. Well, we're not talking about Jared Leto anymore on the show because this week's episode is going to be all about the animated film Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And as you guys know, if you've been listening to the show, It's a very good movie. That's
small little independent
right
film.
Yes. We had Phil Lord and Chris Miller on the show last week. Make sure you guys check out that episode. And as we teased, we have the film's directors joining us for a very special chat that you guys want to stick around for. And then following that conversation, we're going to have our spoiler filled conversation about the film Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, all the different things that we had to do. So we're specifically going to drill down on the ending. You guys don't want to miss that conversation. And a couple of questions that we have about where the franchise might be going from here. And by we, I do mean Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Hello, Jakey. How are you, sir?
You look handsome. You're like Benjamin Button. Every time the screen pops up for a Real Blend, I feel like you're getting just a little bit younger.
A little bit younger?
Yeah. Yeah.
And 15 pounds heavier.
We're going to go to Kevin, and Kevin's going to make another David Fincher reference and be like, actually, you look like the gluttony guy from Seven.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I have so many avenues I could go with this.
I'm not really true.
I will say, though, because you made a Benjamin Button reference, I know I've mentioned this in the show before. If you're not watching the show, Dave, I just got to say Brad Pitt has an involvement on that show. So if you haven't seen it, and he is amazing in it. That's all I will say. Yes, Brad Pitt is literally the star of the season 3 finale of Dave. And he sings in it. And he's amazing in it. He is literally the star of that episode. And it is brilliant. If you haven't seen Dave. Delicious. I was waiting for him to say that.
Delicious.
We got to get Brad Pitt on the show because that dude nerves out.
We'll dial him up next week.
We've been pushing him off, but I guess now we'll
finally
do it.
Time.
I mean, Pitt nerds out.
It's Pitt time.
That's Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Hello, Kevin. How are you, sir?
Sean, Jacob, Gabriel, and also hello to all the listeners, and thank you for all the nice comments we got on our new show Vibe, and it's been nice to read it all, and I hope you guys are feeling the energy on this one. Yes. This is going to be a lot more loose and kind of like our premiums, but also still dialed into what we're doing each week, so we're very excited.
It was a nice reminder that this show that we do doesn't exist in a vacuum, you know,
right.
Like we put it out, and then, you know, get feedback every once in a while from people on social media, but the comments under last week's episode were truly phenomenal. And one of the aspects that people really zeroed in on is how they feel that we, as the hosts, make them feel like they are part of the show. They feel like it's very interactive. Yeah. They feel like they're part of a Real Blend family. I know we were heavy on that at the beginning, and I want to get back to doing that. I want to make people feel like they are contributing to the show and part of the show. And we're going to have something towards the end of the episode that will sort of loop people in. If you're watching us on YouTube, because the YouTube element is what I'm really excited about because of the video things that we're able to do. Thank you for joining us here. And make sure you join us here every Friday. Yes, listen on your normal podcast feeds. That's fantastic as well, too. We're available in different places you can. But specifically, go to youtube.com/RealBlendPodcast. Watch us on your phones. Watch us on your televisions. Watch us on your laptops on Fridays when your boss thinks that you're working. It's a great way
to
pass time. Yeah, I do, too. While you're there, please hit subscribe, turn on your notifications, leave comments down below, and keep that YouTube channel growing, which we really, really appreciate. And of course, you have the ability to sign up for additional Real Blend through the Real Blend Premium. We discussed the fact that the premium episodes are not going to be happening anymore, but we still have, of course, the ad-free version of the show, which you guys might be very interested in getting, and the newsletter that comes from me every other week, which is also going to have call to action that you guys can participate in. Keep those emails coming in. I really enjoy hearing from everybody, and then I usually share it with the boys when you guys send some really nice. Okay, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. As mentioned, we had Phil Lord and Chris Miller on last week's show. They were fantastic. We made sure to avoid spoilers as much as we could with those guys. But we knew, in addition, that we were going to get the three directors behind the show. So it's Ken Powers, Joaquin Dos Santos, and Justin K. Thompson. And they did not direct Into the Spider-Verse. This is their first foray into the Spider-Verse world. Kemp, you guys might know, he co-directed Soul for Pixar. And then Justin, I know, worked on Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. So they all have had connections to Phil and Chris, but then came on board to direct Across the Spider-Verse. And they are also staying on board, from what I understand, to direct Beyond, which currently has a March 29th, 2024 release date. We will see if it actually reaches that. But with these guys, we said, hey, spoiler filled. You know, feel free to talk as openly as you want to about the process. We're going to hold it till this week so that people who have seen the movie can listen to it without fearing getting anything spoiled, because we really definitely wanted to get into their process. And so without further ado, let's get to the Across the Spider-Verse interview with the three co-directors of the film, Kemp Powers, Joaquin Dos Santos, and Justin K. Thompson. The strange thing is we cannot find the words to express how magnificent it is. You have a truly special masterpiece.
Oh, thank you, man. Wow. That means a lot.
That means a ton.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I'm going to start us here. Oh, and I want to let everybody know, too, that this is going to run after June 5th. And so you guys are free to talk at length.
Spoilers. Okay, spoiler city.
If you want to get into details, you're allowed to. All right, I want to start with this because right off the bat, there's a rhythm to the movement of the picture. It starts with Gwen's drumming, which I think is fantastic. And this moves to a beat in a way that I haven't seen other animated movies really do. But I want you guys to talk about whether it's possible to animate to the beats of music. Is it something that has to be done in the edit? What is the process of approaching that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of everything. It's kind of a smorgasbord of stuff. But yes, it is possible to animate to a beat. That drumming sort of motif was something that was set up even at the storyboard phase.
Right.
Through editorial, and then that gets passed on to layout and animation. So yeah, you do plan for it. And then there's cutting patterns and stuff that you can do in editorial to make stuff have sort of a rhythmic feel.
And when then, it's, oh, sorry, go ahead. Oh. When it starts out, it's temp music, you understand.
Yeah.
So when we're doing it in 2D storyboards, Gwen is drumming, but it's not matched to music, and right. It's temp music, and it stays temp music through rough layout until we get into animation and we finally get the, because Daniel Pemberton scored that. That's actually Daniel Pemberton drumming. So matched it to Daniel Pemberton's drumming. That's one of the last things that happens. But a lot of it is temp music and conceptual until the actual score gets delivered.
And then we have to go back to animation once we have that score and then retime some of the things so that they line up perfectly. And then we were timing, then when we get to lighting and stuff, now we have the score, we have the animation. We actually changed some of our shots because of the score. Yeah. Uh-huh. And and it influenced our cutting pattern because of the score. And then we started adding all these like effects and these like, and that you see it's like the shapes and stuff that are reacting to the music in real time. Mm-hmm. So we kind of did that up until the very last
day. I was going to say, it's the first thing in the film that we started on early, and it was also the last thing, it was, among the last things we finished.
I think it was the last thing we finished, actually.
Yeah.
But it's a real, I mean, I think it's probably the strongest, like you said, it's like, it was like one of the core ideas that we had at the beginning. But it's such a handoff to every department and then back again in order to make it work. Right. Yeah.
And shout out to Daniel Pemberton, one of the best composers out there. Yeah, didn't he do he did Steve Jobs with Danny Boyle? And I remember didn't he record each year in a different sound? Like he used like old school technology, and then as the technology got more and more, he like went more and more higher in the tech. Which
you
is
guys
really kind of a
have to interview him. Because
I was going to say, if you're going to do us and Phil and Chris, you're kind of doing yourselves a disservice to not sit down with Daniel Pemberton,
dude.
Okay,
for
we'd
love to.
That's the whole. That's the whole point of our show.
Sure. You know the people to talk to. The same.
I'll send you his number.
Yeah, you guys should really sit down with Daniel Pemberton. Seriously.
Okay. This is what our show is. Like our whole goal of creating the show was to educate people on the filmmaking process. Like we've had Zimmer on and a lot of Danny Elfman. So we're down for Pemberton. Well,
Daniel is amazing, and he's an amazing character. He's an amazing person to talk to. You definitely got to reach out to him.
And I got to say, like as a filmmaker, it's one of the most like enjoyable parts of the creative process. I mean, I've been really lucky. You know, on Soul, we got Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross, and John Batiste. Then on One Night in Miami, we had Terrence Blanchard. Like these compose, like this is such a, I mean, film is musical, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's such a key, I think, underrated, underappreciated part of the process, how it really is as much work as we've done, that musical component of it, it elevates it all.
And that drumming sequence was meant to set the rhythm of the film and letting audiences know right off the bat.
Yeah.
This is not going to be told in a traditional way.
Yes.
We are not going to take you on a journey that you expect. Even if you loved the first movie, we knew we had to go beyond what was expected even of the first movie. Because the first movie did so much, was so inventive and was so daring and was so groundbreaking. Like it just gave us permission to go even further. And we wanted to right out of the gate as the film opens, let people know we're going to take you even beyond what you saw in the first movie.
Yeah.
Incredible.
You guys touch on, and I loved how you handle it, the concept of canon in this film, which is this idea that no matter which kind of Spider-Man you are from whatever universe, there are certain things that just have to happen. And I want to sort of compare that to being a director on a Spider-Man film. No matter what the experience is, whether it be John Watts or Sam Raimi or you guys, whatever type of film it is, what are certain things that are absolutely canon to being a director on a Star Wars or on a Spider-Man film where like it's going to happen to you no matter what?
Well, you're going to be reminded how important it is. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, yeah, you know, like, look, man, it's both our film, but it's also the world's character. You know what I mean?
The audience owns this character.
The audience really owns Spider-Man. But it's also the artist making this film. We've put our hearts and souls into it, and it's a story that means a lot to us. So I think it's that balance.
It's
the balance, I think. And again, I don't know those other directors, so you'd have to speak to them. But at least for, I can't imagine that not being something that is a challenge that needs to be navigated when you're dealing with something that is, I hate words like IP and all that shit like that, because it takes the artistry out of it. When you're dealing with something that is already so beloved by so much of the world, but at the same time you're trying to do something unique that's different, that hasn't been seen before, with a character that everyone feels like they know so well. Hence, they've established so many rules about what you can and cannot do. That's both the gift and the curse of fandom. And once again, I got to experience it firsthand in the beginning with frickin' Star Trek. And I feel like you just, fandom is very vocal, and they get scared until you do the thing that's dead. That's what I loved about the first film, is that I remind people, no one asked for Into the Spider-Verse. In fact, when I remember it was announced, most of the chatter that I heard was, why do we need another Spider-Man movie?
Well, there was an interesting thing that kind of happened in comics when Miles was first brought onto the scene. There was a huge, you know, it sort of divided fandom. There was a lot of weirdos out there that were sort of like anti-Miles and
In principle.
Yeah, on just principle. Like, so it's like that, the essence of that idea is sort of what our canon events are kind of speaking to in a way. You know what I mean? There's a little bit of a wink and a nod, like, hey, we're going to make it work. Like, and it's, Miles and will make it work on his terms.
And that speaks again to like how we approach this film. Like, it automatically was Miles out of the gate was, he was announced that he was different, and it was going to be divided. So we had to just lean into how we were going to be different and just do something that inspired us and was grounded by this emotional journey that he's going to go on. And that's what I think is so exciting about Spider-Man, and why fans are so attached to him, is everybody relates to him as an everyman.
Yes.
And everybody sees themselves in him, and the fact that Spider-Man, and especially Miles Morales, who has like loving parents and a loving supportive family, is even different from Peter Parker in that sense.
Yeah.
And the things that stress him out and the things that are the biggest challenges in his life aren't like fighting these cosmic entities or people with superpowers. It's actually whether or not his parents are proud of him. And that is the thing that we wanted to establish the most when we were making this film, is how he relates to his family and how important that is to him.
And one of the most powerful elements, since we can talk spoilers, one of the most like powerful elements that has incredible double meaning that to me is when Miles is told, you're not supposed to be Spider-Man. Because that's literally the proxy for the audience telling this character, you're not supposed to be
that's
here.
Right.
And that means a lot to me personally, because like, let's lean into this. We know the conversations that happen around all these characters, and how many of what are now canon things did people fight? Heath Ledger's a Joker. That guy from that guy's going to be the Joker? I'm going to boycott the Joker. Oh, Michael Keaton's going to be Batman. Beetlejuice? Oh my God, I want nothing to do with Beetlejuice as Batman.
That's right.
The most most of the most beloved things that have turned into canon, no one wanted. The fandom didn't want it. And we really wanted to just put that right in there and just be like, you know what I mean? Like,
that's incredible.
Everything that you that you can't live without, you didn't want it. You hated the idea of it.
Unbelievable. That's so true. It's so true. That's why you have to lead and not follow.
Yes.
Exactly.
Be a leader and not a follower.
Yes.
Yep.
You know, the emotional core of this film is what I found to be the most resonating. I mean, obviously the visual and the action and the comedy and the way you balance score and soundtrack, which is really hard to do because you have films that could be soundtrack heavy or score heavy. But just moments like he has with his mom about her saying like, please protect this boy. And I hold, it's such a beautiful moment. But I want to talk a little bit about the animation in terms of like nerding out for our audience about how sequences were done, because there is so much going on the screen visually in terms of color, moments that look hand drawn. The animation is just insane to look at. But if you look at the first fight sequence with Vulture, and kind of like the idea of Vulture almost looks hand drawn, and then you have Miles who looks a different way, and there's different animation in that sequence. Can you talk about how you decide who's going to look a certain way, who's going to look hand drawn, who's going to look, you know, a different way? I don't even know the words to put for it, because we were saying this when we texted after the movie was over. I was like, how do you even explain to somebody how this looked visually? So I'm just curious if you can break down the decision process of like when a character looks hand drawn, when they don't. How does that work?
I mean, look, we had long conversations up top. Like, what does it mean for one character to go into another reality? Do they retain their look and stick out like a sore thumb? Do they take on that world's look? Do they take on a bit of that world's look? And honestly, the real answer is what feels the best visually on screen and emotionally on screen. There's no hard rule that we followed. No. There couldn't be. So the Vulture was very much meant to stick out like a sore thumb. You're already a fish out of water as an audience member when you're in Gwen's world, right? You're like, oh my gosh, kaleidoscopic, crazy
watercolors, watercoloring.
It's a lot to take
in. Watercolors were stunning. Stunning.
But then the Vulture, you immediately go, all right, what's the opposite?
What's the opposite?
Sepia. Yeah. You know what I mean? Right, how do you bring in like a hand? The quill, you can see the quill and the texture of the paper that he's drawing.
I feel like a Michelangelo drawing, kind of.
Yeah. Well, we started like looking around.
That's where it started. Yeah, the visual reference. A lot of visual references.
What would be like hand drawn on paper? Yeah. That was like Leonardo da Vinci across. Yeah. And like what? And also Gwen's comic book style is very contemporary.
Yeah.
And we're like, what would be the equivalent, the old equivalent? What's the, like, how far back could we go that would look like something that would feel like a comic book?
And honestly, you look at some of Da Vinci's, you know, sketches and his drawings and his inventions. I mean, we were sort of like taken aback because some of them are pretty ghastly, actually. You're like, ooh, that was horrific. But some of them are almost like his whirligig. It looks like a comic book device, you know? So that it fit really well. We also looked at I can't remember the name of the festival.
There's a festival in France, something deluxe. It was basically these 40-foot tall marionettes. So the mechanics of how the Vulture's wings worked were based off of that. And also, like, conversely, there are certain characters that we just wanted to, part of the fun of them is that they looked exactly how they were supposed to look. A great Insomniac Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Spider-Man 67. The fun in that is that they look, we just recreated exactly one to one what they were, so that you, without a doubt, you knew what the hell they were.
Yeah.
Because I think as we were developing, like you're saying at the beginning, at first when we experimented with the idea that maybe we bring everybody's looks closer together.
Yeah.
I think what we found, it was more exciting to keep Miles a fish out of water and like have, and it was a more interesting journey. The idea that we could show that there's all these different ways to be Spider-Man. And it was actually clearer to us story-wise that if they were more different stylistically from each other, you could see it literally is on screen. There are different ways to be Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, Spider-Person, Spider-Cat, Spider-Dog, monkey. Like
dinosaur.
Yeah, early on.
Spider-T-Rex.
When he goes to 2099, when he first goes to Nueva York, before we had, this was still storyboards, before we'd figured out, like, oh, is he going to retain his look, or how's he going to be fish out of water? There was a great moment that has since been cut for the right reasons, where he still had his sweater with him, and he didn't know what to do. He was like, do I wear it over my shoulders, or do I wrap it around my waist? And Gwen was like, no, don't do that, but it sort of lent to this feeling of, like, I remember having that feeling as a teenager, like, How do I roll the cuffs up? What do I do? How am I going to fit in with this group of people?
Stupid question. Is somebody still hand drawing? Is it all computer?
It is a mix of so many different tools, including hand drawn. But primarily it's all 3D, three-dimensional tools like done in the computer that were developed by Sony Pictures Imageworks, the geniuses that work there, and the art that was driven and drawn and painted by Sony Pictures animation artists. Almost 1,000 people worked on this film, and when you add up and line up all the time, it amounts to about 753 years worth of work went into this movie.
That's all?
and so if like one person tried to do it on their own, it would take you 753 years, in other words.
Oh my God.
So it is visually complex and feels, because it is. It's not just an illusion. And the tools, sometimes we contacted 2D animation houses.
Yeah. And comic book artists.
Yes.
Themselves.
We brought in a lot of comic
that
book
was
artists.
The biggest thing.
Yeah, we brought in a lot. Yeah, Ripley and Ari.
The studio's like, can you guys do it again by March?
Interview over.
You got to let us enjoy what this moment. Hard earned.
Kemp, I want to ask, this might be a difficult one, but what is a joke that you guys are incredibly proud of that you're afraid the audience might miss just because there's so much going on and it might go past too fast?
That I think that I'm afraid the audience might miss.
I hope they didn't miss any.
I don't think, honestly, one thing is a moment that it's not even a joke. It's just in the beginning when the spot goes into the bodega, because I remember discussing this in dailies and animation. And Ziggy goes, hey, man, what are you doing back there? It's the fact that he's pulling the baseball bat out as he's asking, and it just like passes right under the, like right below the line. Because we had a version where it was very dramatic, where he's like, what are you doing back there? It was like, hey, man, what are you doing back there? He's pulling out a bat to beat this guy's ass. And that's like really funny to me. But most of the jokes, I think that I don't think they're going to go over.
The ATM joke is my favorite joke in the whole movie, by the way. I never knew that. And naan bread and chai tea. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? How did I not know this?
I hope people, the only way people can miss some of these jokes is if they're laughing and stop paying, you know, attention, which is just, you know, you try to time it. That's the wonderful thing about doing test screenings.
Yeah.
With test audiences is you go like, oh man, we need a little bit of a breather because that sometimes you're surprised by the things that really make people laugh.
Gotcha. Mm.
There's a joke from the first movie that I always just loved. And whenever I remember when my dad watched, I was like, dude, watch this little moment. And it's the moment when a character gets hit on the head with a bagel. And then it says bagel.
Yes.
I always just thought like, oh, that's such a funny little, like that's such a, just within this great, grand, beautiful movie. That's such a funny, small little moment that we have now since learned is not a small little moment. It is a moment. It has taken this, what I thought was just a funny one-off joke, and spun it into this huge, incredible thing. Did you guys, was it always meant to be a thing?
Yeah.
We're going to come back later to that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the very beginning, that dude who gets hit with the bagel is going to be our villain.
And by the way, that guy had his own cosplay at cons.
Yeah, we saw a cosplay. Yeah, that guy was always going to be. Yeah, the dude who got hit with the bagel is going to be the big villain of
And as I pointed out, it's the breakfast food with a hole in it.
Yeah.
Very deliberate. I love, well, I was telling the guys, it's one of the things that's beautiful about this movie is throughout all the insanity of it all, you are constantly reminded that he's just a teenager.
Yeah.
It almost is like the immersion is pulling you back to understanding, hey, this is a kid who's dealing with the weight of the world, literally. But one of the things that I love is just this sense of his parents grounding him, not understanding the weight of what he's dealing with. So I wanted to ask each of you, it reminded me, I thought back to my childhood. Do you each remember stories at all about being grounded as a kid? Do you remember a story about a length of time you got grounded for something you did, maybe something similar to what Miles was doing?
I do. I have a few. Single mom. She did the best she could. She's super awesome. I was an only child, so the notion of grounding me was like, please send me to my room where I can just draw for hours on end and be not bothered. So there was a lot of that. I was happy to be in my room alone by myself. You know, the biggest punishment is like, well, you're not allowed to draw. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm kind of hosed, but like for the most part, she would never, you know, that happened like maybe twice. But yeah, alone to draw was totally fine for me.
What about you guys?
I was grounded a lot. And I for all kinds of things, I was a very rebellious kind of kid, and but not in the way of like not wanting to listen to my parents or anything like that. It was more of like I was so just driven to kind of be this sort of I just wanted to find my own path at all times, yeah, and not be told like how I had to live my life, kind of thing.
Kind of like Miles.
Kind of like Miles. And it's funny you asking me this, because I didn't even realize as we were doing it at the time, but when my father would ground me, I would actually sneak out my window and like just like he does in this movie, and I did it constantly, and I would try to tell my dad after a while. I was like, don't bother, I'm just gonna go out the window. Like, and I was trying to be like, and I felt like a grown-up when I was talking to him, you know. And it reminds me, and I think channeling a lot of that energy of like, you want to feel like a grown-up while your parents are still reprimanding you and trying to discipline you in this way, is kind of like the crux that Miles, it's like that crossroads Miles finds himself in this movie. And I think we channeled that a lot. And it's funny that we have him like climb out the window, because I did that so much.
He's got a lot of authoritarian figures that are trying to ground him.
Yeah.
And Kemp, for you?
I just, as crazy as this sounds, I don't think I ever was grounded for anything.
Wow.
But Dad, don't clap, because part of it was that I was like such an introvert that my mom was like, get out of the fucking house.
Yeah.
So it was very much like grounding would have been like my dream. And it was very much just like, get out, go outside, you know, whatever. And I also had this thing where if I had like a curfew or something, or a certain time, I would always hit it. I might be like all over the place, but I would always like hit those curfews that never really put me. I was equated to like, there's that great comedy, Meet the Parents, and De Niro's son like comes in the window and like sprays the Axe body spray on. Like, as long as you, when you have, my mom was in the army, so as long, when you have a military parent, it's about just
time.
Hitting your times, hitting your curfews, hitting your deadlines. And it served me well as a journalist. I always hit deadlines. So, like, it came from my mom. Like, I could pretty much burn the city down as long as I, like, got back by, like, a certain time. So I got very good about, like, pushing it until 30 seconds before whatever my curfew or deadline is. And I have to say, I've never been grounded.
You're in some Ferris Bueller's
land here, man. That's amazing. Guys, we are getting close to running out of time. And so I want to ask kind of a big question. Spider-Man has legitimately changed my life. Like, I am the person that I am because of that character and who he is. And so I want to know, just in the process of working on this film and planning for the next one, and I'm sure you'll hear a lot of it from feedback from fans, but I'm, you know, of stories that they have that connect them to Spider-Man. I'm curious if you could each go through and just talk to me about how the character has maybe impacted your life or changed your life in a specific way, maybe starting with Kemp.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Spider-Man is really special. I'm from New York, so growing up, one of the things that drew me to Marvel Comics was that they were in the real world. And within those Marvel Comics, Spider-Man was in a world that I recognized. When he was swinging from buildings, I recognized those buildings. And, you know, when he was in the neighborhood. So Spider-Man was the first hero that I encountered. And another element of Spider-Man that I always loved was that he was almost always the underdog. He was always kind of like losing most of his fights. And then at the last minute, something came up. I forgot what comic it was, but there was one where Spider-Man was getting his butt kicked by Iron Man. And something like triggered him, and he like beat Iron Man's armor off of him, like in a rage. And it was this idea of like a character that could be, you pushed him and pushed him, and he was actually he was actually didn't want to fight, you know? So much of the Spider-Man for me was that other heroes attack, attack, attack. Spider-Man spends most of his time saving people.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, saving people. And I think when you look at this film, some of my favorite scenes in Mumbadan, it's a rescue scene. It's literally them saving as many people as they can. And to me, that's the essence of what makes Spider-Man awesome. What bummed me out about Batman was that he was like seven, like, great, I'm murdered and he's going to solve my murder. That's not doing me any favors. Like, Spider-Man would actually like save me before they killed me, which I thought was kind of nice. And he existed in his, I know he's the world's greatest detective, but like, I'd rather be like, stop the crime.
Yeah.
And so Spider-Man like existed in my world, and it was the world right outside my window. So just being a kid growing up in Brooklyn, I just related to that character, I think, more than any other, you know, superhero. And honestly, he's a superhero that I felt like the most I would be the most likely to be if I was ever going to be a superhero, you know?
Damn.
Justin, similar?
Similar, of course. I could echo all of that, except I'm not from Brooklyn. But I do think I think for me the thing I love about Spider-Man and I have a confession. I was always a fan of Spider-Man, but I really didn't get into him until I read those Miles Morales comics, because I think I just liked that he was trying to really balance, and even Peter Parker. I love that. The thing I loved about them the most is that they're trying to, like I said earlier, their biggest problems weren't these cosmic superheroes that they supervillains that they were fighting. It was whether the girl that they were pining for would return that, you know, like sort of affection.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, their biggest problem was whether or not they, you know, we're going to get straight A's, or if they didn't, were they going to get grounded? You know, their biggest problems were, you know, are they going to like be able to pay rent? You know, it's like, it's kind of awesome. Yeah. And I think that was, for me, like why I love it. It's relatable. It's like everyday life, but then also, oh man, I'm also a superhero and I have to like make sure everybody survives too. Like, you know, but also, hey, can I borrow some money? Is kind of like
super relatable.
It's kind of an amazing relatable thing. Yeah. And actually what I love about it, and I'm just also like just personally just such a fan of silly jokes and one-liners, and nobody's better at them than Spider-Man.
I know. It's his humor that does it for me, honestly. That's why that moment when Gwen says to her father, like, how's the manhunt for me go? Yeah. I think that's such a great moment.
Still got it.
With her fake voice. Yeah.
I love how they're all, one of the hardest things, they're all funny in our film in different ways, which I was so excited about how different Spider-Punk managed to be funny.
Yeah.
Than Cobb, than Miles, than Peter B., than Gwen. How they all have a different kind of humor. Even Miguel.
They all have
and they get you to laugh.
Yep.
Yeah. And welcome for you real quick, how Spider-Man?
Super duper quick. All the reasons. I mean, the relatability is the thing. I was born in Portugal. My family's crest is the spider. So, like, it's my middle name is Aranha. Like, it has been in my life literally since before I knew what Spider-Man was. I had a Spider-Man, a John Romita Sr. Spider-Man poster in my room. It's like the first image I can remember. I will say, so he was, I mean, it was just like by default, he was my favorite character. I think there's something instantly gratifying to a kid about somebody that basically looks like a super colorful luchador swinging through the city.
Mm-hmm.
But what really sort of shifted for me was when Miles really started rising to sort of acceptance and prominence. It was the first time I had seen the character transcend and I have groups of people that, you know, never felt a certain kinship to him. It's felt maybe a certain amount. They're now saying, like, I see myself in this character. The idea of anybody can wear the mask, just that phrase alone really sort of shifted sort of the everything on its ear in the best possible way.
My wife works in public elementary education, and it's strange to her that I'm surprised that Miles is their Spider-Man. Yeah. Like, yes. All the kids in her school and in that
same district, with my kid. Like,
that's who their Spider-Man is growing up, and it's because of the first movie, it's because of the comics, and it's absolutely going to be because of this one.
It's freaking beautiful.
Guys, I wish we had an hour more. You guys are fantastic. Thank you so much for joining our show. The film is a straight up masterpiece.
Thank you so much.
We'll be racing back to go see it. So.
And Kem, thank you for Soul, by the way.
Of course.
And speaking of mental health, that line that Miles says to his father.
Black men of your age tend to not. Yeah.
Yes, I just wanted to say thank you because that line and then what you did with Soul, just the way you've expressed mental health in your work, it's just astounding. So thank you for what you do.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Of course, we want to thank our good friends at Sony Pictures for hooking us up with that interview and giving us opportunity to get so much great Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse content. In addition to those guys who were fantastic, earlier this week, we had a bonus episode with the film's composer, Daniel Pemberton. And if you guys haven't gone out of your way to go listen to that, and I actually the numbers on that one were really great out of the gate. And I do feel like when we get a composer on the show, people respond. Yeah. To that, because they don't get a lot of I want to say mainstream interviews, like they don't get interviewed on larger outlets all the time.
And Daniel was amazing, and I'll just say this because we're gonna move on to spoilers, but if you're a fan of anything he's done, particularly Steve Jobs, he mm-hmm. dives really deeply into the process of creating that score with Danny Boyle. But I gotta tell you, this interview is like nuts and bolts of composing music. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of cool, and if you're really nerdy about how composition is done, how original scores are done, he really dives into it from a narrative perspective. Even Sean and I were sitting there going, wow, this is like insane, just the thought process and the detail that he goes into. So it is a bonus episode, but it's also an interview that we're super proud of. And it's a really interesting perspective and stuff that I didn't know. And I did see a comment under the interview asking us to have other composers on. We've had Ludwig Göransson on for Tenet. We had Hans Zimmer for Dune. We also have
show friend of the show.
Yeah.
It was a great interview. I listened to it a little bit earlier today. It did feel like it was missing something, and I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was. Yeah. But there's about a third of a hole sort of just in that interview
It was missing a Gabe question. I thought that was that we were referring to.
All right. So Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, as expected, dominated the box office. Its domestic opening was $120 million. Its worldwide total as of today is 200. So today, by saying that, we are recording on Wednesday, is $221 million worldwide. However, what's most important is that we made bets on what we thought that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse was going to open to. I want to remind everybody that the projections for this movie put it in a very large window of $80 million to $120 million. So not quite exact science, precise science. But I want to remind the listeners where we went and come up with who won ultimately. So we're going to use Price is Right rules, right? You got to get as close as you can without going over. I think that's what's fair, right?
Says so the guy looking at the numbers.
Yeah. Jake said Jake said $100 million, so he was off by 20. Kevin said $125 million, so he went a little bit higher.
Wah, 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 wah.
And the kid comes in with $115 million.
I gotta say, like, I'm not loving this new format of the show where Sean wins.
Yep.
I don't really know what my role is supposed to be on the show then.
Yeah, Sean peek behind won. The curtain. I won the last premium game as well too.
Premium game. Yeah. No one cares.
I care also, wholeheartedly.
It's very important to note this, and we discussed this in the show last week. The first Into the Spider-Verse Spider-Man film 2018 opened to $35 million. Okay. This opened nuts. To 120.5. Yeah. And that is, you know, one of the things we discussed in the show is why how the first one became more popular once it hit Netflix. People found it. I mean, because, you know, an animated Spider-Man film coming out with the live action Spider-Man films, it still did well. I think it did like $364 million worldwide total. But the jump from the domestic open from 35 to 120 million for the second one is just astounding, and also just a reminder. And remember, one's pre-pandemic, that was, you know, 2018, and then now this one, it's really kind of an interesting perspective to think about where we are with movies and how well people are going to the movie theaters. And, well, you know, these box office numbers are really a big deal. It just shows how healthy the marketplace is right now.
And similar to Mario, which I think appealed to young kids who just wanted to see something animated.
Yeah.
Yep. And an older audience who grew up with playing Super Mario Brothers games. I think Spider-Verse appeals to multiple demographics and generations as well, too.
Sure.
You know, this is the kind of movie that parents want to go to as well to see, you know, with their kids. I've heard from a number of people who were like, oh, yeah, I'm taking my kids because I want to see that almost as much as they do, kind of thing.
Could you imagine being a young kid and this being the animation you're seeing as a young kid? Like when we were growing up, Sean was born in 1920. So he dealt with a lot of different animation styles over the years.
Honestly, I did the junket for that Steamboat Willie. Where it's just Mickey on the boat and he's whistling. Uh-huh.
That was a great junket. And then I still think your best interview of all time was Orson Welles for Citizen Kane. But we can get to that later. But I do think that in terms of...
The problem was that Sean fell asleep. So his first question was, wait, what was Rosebud?
Rosebud? But in reality, like it is interesting to think about, like, kids these days. This is their animation. And now Spider-Verse is also a very unique, groundbreaking style of animation that we haven't really dealt with. I mean, with Into the Spider-Verse and now this, it's very interesting kind of how they're playing with different forms of animation, as you've heard the directors talk about on our show. But I can't imagine being a 10-year-old and this being considered to be like, this is the animation I'm viewing. It's unbelievable.
Let's use that as a transition. So we're going to get into full spoilers right now. So it's off to a great start at the box office. I hope it holds. We shall see. It's going up against Transformers this week.
Yeah.
I'll be curious. I think it could be Transformers.
I 100% think it could be Transformers.
I think it will, because Transformers, and actually, by the way, I know we're not going to review Transformers. I liked the new Transformers. I thought it was the best one since the first one. And I know that's not really saying much, but
better than Bumblebee.
I like Bumblebee a lot. I think this is better than Bumblebee.
I actually do think this is better also. They're different. Well,
yeah,
I really like Bumblebee. That's a bold statement.
That's also the soundtrack for me. All the '90s hip hop, a lot of Wu-Tang and Biggie, and also Pete Davidson's really great in it.
Like, he's fun. I wasn't really hyped for this, but that has me. I was really worried it was a step back from Bumblebee. But
there's
good
a Bumblebee moment in Rise of the Beasts that uses LL Cool J's.
Don't say it. Don't say the words.
Okay, I won't say it. It uses LL Cool J.
Let it happen.
It's an needle drop.
Stand up and cheer in the theater type moment. And I don't care 100%. About Transformers like one bit. And it was like a great moment.
I want to ask you guys for Spider-Verse before we move into spoilers. I'll look up the tracking for that. Where do you guys think it ends up? Not going to cross a billion, but where do you think it ends up?
600?
Wait, you're asking Spider-Verse or Transformers?
Spider-Verse. Yeah,
where does it end up? 600?
I think it's going to be leggy, and I'm going to say somewhere between 800 and 900. I think it could challenge Guardians for movie of the summer.
I'd put it in that 800, 900 range, probably.
Here's the biggest issue,
though. Copy my answer, Sean. That's not how you're going to win.
But remember what's coming out in the next month and the next 2 months. So, first of all, Spider-Verse had IMAX this weekend, which obviously ups their charges. And then coming up, we have literally Transformers, The Flash, Indy 5, Barbie, Oppenheimer.
Mission.
I think legs would have. Let's say this opened in August.
Tom Cruise just had a heart attack that Kevin skipped Mission when listing all the movies that are coming out this summer.
But let's say Spider-Verse opened in August. And nothing was coming out. I could see it.
Which is why, don't you think that, like, don't you think that studios need to start thinking outside the box in terms of release dates? Like, what is wrong with putting out? And I get the concept of kids out of school, but like kids, like people will go see movies even if kids are in school. Like some of these movies that aren't doing as well because of they're going up against something else could have done. But like, honestly, 65 could have done perfectly well and been a pretty solid $25 million opening in January or September. Like it didn't have to come out opposite whatever the big, what is it? What did it come out opposite John Wick or whatever the case was? Like, start thinking outside the box.
To round this section off, and then we'll move into spoilers, folks. Box Office Pro, which nailed the projection last weekend, has Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse winning the weekend with 50.5 million over the 3 days. And fair. Transformers just underneath it with 49.5.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, neck and neck.
And it looks like Spider-Verse is going to still be in more theaters than Transformers.
Does Transformers take over IMAX? That's a key.
Yeah, it is taking IMAX, Kev.
All right, so Kevin was mentioning, we're going to dive into full spoilers now at this point from Across the Spider-Verse. So if, for whatever reason, you have made it this far into the podcast and have not yet seen the movie and still want to be unspoiled, now is your chance to probably back out. Just hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come on back and join our spoiler-filled conversation.
Here's what you can do, mute us, and then just in the comments, just write comments saying what you think we're saying.
Make fun of us, bump
the algorithm, you know.
Oh my god, can someone do one of those funny videos where they put fake conversations?
Oh god, please don't.
So that really concerns me.
We'll go viral. I think we would go viral if that happened. I know we want to start with the ending and the cliffhanger conversation, but I just want to mention this one point because I found this to be astounding. Kevin was talking about, what if this was your animation as a kid? And he pointed out, you know, 10-year-olds who were going to the theaters to witness this. And we learned over this past week that the Lego World animation sequence in Across the Spider-Verse, where the spot pokes in and we get to see the Lego world that looks very much like the Daily Bugle set that they sold recently. Mm. And then you see Peter Parker interact with J. Jonah Jameson and he goes into the bathroom and he goes boop, 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 and then talks to Oscar Isaac. That whole thing, that whole sequence was animated by a 14-year-old kid.
Was it?
Who they found on social media. Yes. They found that kid on social media. He redid the entire Across the Spider-Verse trailer using only Legos. And so I'm not sure if it was Phil or Chris or if it was the directors, but they contacted this 14-year-old kid and said, hey, do this sequence
for us. Can we get this kid on the show?
In its entirety. I would love to.
Brad Pitt first.
I would love to.
And then with this kid.
Let's let Brad
Pitt. That's why Pitt gets bumped again.
Brad Pitt got bumped. Sorry, Brad Pitt.
Sorry, is he Brad Pitt or Matt Damon? Is that what it's
Sorry, Brad Pitt. We ran out of time.
Brad's just sitting in the waiting queue of Zoom, like being trying to get let in by Gabe. And like we're just like.
But I really want to point out that that's a bigger conversation that I really want to give props to Phil Lord and Chris Miller for, because it was the same thing with the Spider-Man from India, where I guess the initial draft, some of the writers on or people in the production on Across the Spider-Verse who are from India voiced their concerns, saying, you know, this character could be better. You know, those of us who understand that country and that culture feel that it could be better. And apparently that word got back to Phil Lord and Chris Miller. And we all know Hollywood well enough to know that it's full of egos that 99 times out of 100 would have shut down those concerns. Apparently, Phil Lord and Chris Miller brought in those people voicing those concerns and said, hey, like, Tell us what we can do. Tell us how we can make this better. And all of those people had a voice that was made, which I really thought was fantastic. It was in our interview last week. And I really think that is a testament to same thing with this 14-year-old kid. They recognize talent. Talent is talent. Voices are voices. Opinions are opinions. It doesn't matter who they're coming from. Get the right people in the room and your movie turns out this way. This movie is a shining example of get as many different voices in the room and look how incredible the final product turns out to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They mentioned like diversity, these diversity issues that are sometimes mandated by studios, that they don't want to look at them as mandates. They want to look at them as 100%. Opportunities. To better the content, to better the story.
And it did. I mean,
especially.
Yeah.
That was one of the best sequences.
Like Spider-Verse.
Yeah. I love that sequence.
The Mumbatan is unbelievably good. And, you know, that's definitely one of those sequences where, you know, you can pause it at multiple times and scour the backgrounds and just find unlimited references to things that are going on in Across the Spider-Verse. The debate that has been plaguing the Real Blend text thread, and it happened from the moment Kevin McCarthy screened this movie, is whether or not Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is a complete movie. And I want desperately to hear from listeners who have made it this far to tell us whether you believe that it is a complete movie or half a movie. Because we brought this up in our conversation with Phil and Chris, and they gave their opinion as to why they felt that they did tell a complete arc to the story. But Kevin has experienced, and I also have experienced, people who have come out of the movie saying, oh, I'm bummed that it's a cliffhanger. My son, Brendan, like PJ loved it. And Brendan was like, what the heck? Like, why do I got to wait for the rest of the story? I think Jake and I are on the side of it's a complete story in the way that movies like Back to the Future Part 2 or even Empire Strikes Back that do have cliffhanger elements to them still told enough of a story to feel like a movie. But Kevin very clearly thinks that it doesn't feel like a movie if it doesn't have an ending.
My line I've been saying is less like Across the Spider-Verse to me in my heart isn't part one of two. It's part two of three.
OK,
yeah,
that's fair.
I think.
But Kev,
and so I've had a few instances of parents who have reached out to me or people that I've worked with that took their kids to see this movie and their kids were angry at the end. Like they were like, what? To be continued? And listen, don't get me wrong. I have no problem with cliffhangers. Gabe made a great point about Infinity War. I think the issue that I took was going in. I would like to have. I think the marketing should have talked about that. But to Gabe's point, obviously, the marketing worked because everyone went to see it and they made a lot more money than the first one. But when you look at Into the Spider-Verse, to me, that is a complete story. Even though it's part one, Into the Spider-Verse has a full blown story. Does Into the Spider-Verse have a to be continued at the end?
No, but it
has the tease of Gwen showing up through the portal and saying to Miles, like, hey, Miles, do you have a moment? And it teases that like they're about
to
go.
And the post credit scene is Oscar Isaac sort of beginning his journey on for what we know he's going to end up doing.
And so it's interesting, like this, Dune Part One, Dead Reckoning Part One. I'm going into Mission expecting a cliffhanger. I went into
Fast X had a cliffhanger.
It did. And it's interesting.
Fast X wasn't a part one. Fast X was just Fast X.
And you're 100% right. And
well, I think Fast X is like those, you know, those Twitter threads where someone just starts it and they don't know. So they put one of slash question mark. It's Fast X one slash question mark.
I mean, it's in all honesty, like I can go back and forth all day with because I do think Empire Strikes Back is probably a great example of this. And so is Infinity War. They're both films that left you with a cliffhanger, though. I would still argue that Infinity War and Empire felt more complete to me. I can sit down, not that I couldn't sit down and watch Across the Spider-Verse, but when Beyond comes out, I would consider that a package deal. Like I would probably, like with Kill Bill, even though I Jake and I argue it's one film and Sean argues it's two, what's interesting about that, to Sean's argument, is he considers Kill Bill Volume 1 a part, you consider that to be a full movie, right? Sean, is that how you argue that?
Yeah. Sean thinks it. I don't know that we can go into that comparison. One, because it's a storied comparison that we have on the show already, and we've talked it to death. But two, that is different in that it was one movie that was forced to be split, and there's a lot. The merits of each side of that are different than the merits of each side of this.
Okay, well, this was the point that I brought up in the conversation today. Is like, what is the definition of a full movie? Because I think by the time Spider-Verse 1, 2, and 3 play out, it's going to be one story all the way through.
But, okay, yes. But Back to the Future Part 2, to me, tells a complete story, even though 3...
Because they also feel so different. I mean, they just let me ask you something. If Across the Spider-Verse did not end with that little screen that said, to be continued, because the first one doesn't. If it didn't end with that, would it make people feel if it just sort of ended and went to black and across and then you're like, oh my God, what a great cliffhanger.
I think the problem comes before that. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And if we're in spoilers, we'll just talk
about
spoilers.
I mean, yeah, you can talk openly.
We are dealing with a scenario that's set up about Miles's father. And that is a gigantic story point that's set up. That's going now the argument for Across the Spider-Verse. And again, to be clear, we all love this movie. I consider it a masterpiece in terms of a film. And someone gave me crap the other day. They're like, why'd you give it a 4.5 out of 5? I said, because I didn't feel it was a complete film. And I still think it's as what it is, the 2 hour and 17 minute, whatever the length of the film is. It's incredible. It's a perfect movie, essentially, in terms
Can I ask you a question? This goes to the point that you're making. Let me ask you this. Would you have an easier time with it? Because I feel like what you're saying is it's not a complete film because it doesn't complete sort of the journey that Miles is on.
Well, but if you it doesn't complete one story though. Like there's
let me make this point though. Is that the opening of the film is about Gwen feeling like I don't want to be a part of this band and I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can really do this. And then the end of the film is her putting the band back together. So if you look at Across the Spider-Verse as Gwen's movie story, then it is a sort of complete arc. It is about not being able to be a part of a group and then at the end being like, shit, I was just a part of the wrong group. This is the group.
Beyond 100%. Is going to switch focus to another character. I don't know which one yet,
please,
but it makes me think
Spider
Beyond
Ham.
Will.
Please, Spider-Ham.
But in all honesty, though, we're splitting hairs here because we all love the film.
Of course.
But it does come down to an interesting point of view, though, because what I'm hearing from parents that kids, I guess if you go back to the Phil and Chris interview, when I asked Phil and Chris about the marketing of the film and how they were planning to market it, that was my issue, was the idea that kids were going into this film not understanding the business of the movie, right? Like they're not on movie sites probably all day long, logging everything that's happening, every detail, how things are being split up and not split up. If you're, you know, a 12-year-old kid and you sit down to watch that movie and it's not called Part One, it's just called Across the Spider-Verse, I could see that there being a level of disappointment if the film ends the way it does. It's not that it hurts the movie. I just don't think it's a full, complete film because we need that arc of what happens to Miles' father to pan out. That becomes really the big, like Lord of the Rings, for example. I consider those full films because they each tell a full blown story. Now, if you want to use the Gwen argument,
I want to jump in because you bring up something that I think is interesting that I didn't think of when we had this discussion earlier. And I think what's interesting about this is I think it's going to be different for a lot of different people because there are so many through lines, mm-hmm. so many different stories. When you mentioned that you wanted the dad's story to be resolved, I assumed when you were talking about it not being complete, you were concerned about the Spot story not being resolved,
no,
which is another.
It was so
that's
Miles
what I think
father.
That's what I think is interesting is that it depends on what you're tied to, because they do, as Jake very well pointed out, and I think even within Miles' story, they complete a story of him being told, you know, this is what you need to do. The counselor saying, this is your story. This is, we got to sell this so you can get into college. The spider people.
God, this movie is so good.
Reinforcing that and saying, this is your story. You're Spider-Man. This is how Spider-Man's supposed to go. And then his story ends with, you were never supposed to be Spider-Man. And him going, I'm going to tell my own story. Like, that's his arc in this movie, is learning his individuality in a world of people that reflect him. I hadn't thought about the dad, which is interesting, but I assume people are also upset that the Spot doesn't happen because you're kind of, we're trained to think like, which I love that the movie is telling us, yelling at us. Jason Schwartzman's yelling at us. I'm not a monster of the week. I'm the big bad. You're not going to solve this problem in this
brilliant.
Movie. You're going to have to fight me later. I'm not the, you know, villain of the week movie, you know, villain of the movie.
At the end when when the colors are reversed and the Spot is black with the white
so
spot.
So terrifying.
Oh my God. It was scary. And also he's got an interesting, like almost Freddy Krueger, like arm sort of dislocation where, because if you're watching, like Freddy Krueger always, his arm hangs a little bit lower like a gunslinger. Like it always, he's got a very cool Freddy Krueger sort of pose to him at the end.
That's actually interesting because I got Rorschach vibes a little bit, the way Spot works.
Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah.
That's Jackie Earle. Jackie Earle Haley.
Well done.
To put a button on that point though, what I was getting at, and I'm curious for you guys to answer this. What was the story that when it ended that you went, like, what was the first storyline that you thought, man, I thought I was going to get that resolution, that felt, that emptiness that we're talking about? Was it the dad?
Miles'
was
father.
It the Spot? Was it Miles' father?
It was Miles. Yeah, because the ending is so, the entire, and actually, Gabe, the way you explained it just now is actually fascinating to me, because every time you guys explain it to me, I go, huh, they're right. But then I go,
but you still have that feeling. It doesn't change the feeling that you have.
Right. Yeah. It's in my gut.
To be fair, like, you're allowed to have that feeling. Yeah, like, there's nothing, like, there's, you know, like, there's no really, I argue there's no right or wrong here. I feel like I'm able to sleep a little bit. Oh, 100%.
It's more in my gut. It's more in my gut, really. It's because the points you're making are exactly right.
Will you feel better? And maybe we already touched on this. Will you feel better when the third one comes out? Because they've already said there is no four. It's three, and that's the story. And now that we know that they are really working at one overarching story rather than a one and a two and a three, will you feel better when you basically have three chapters of one story and you can just sort of look at it as one giant piece? Did you guys see that? That thing that came out earlier this week that they were about the Prowler colors and into the Spider-Verse that they were dropping. So they were dropping hints on things, even the bagel, you know, joke. They were dropping hints on stuff in part one, which makes me think that there are hints in part one about part three that we don't even know about.
So I feel like when you
see the bigger picture, are you going to feel better about it?
I think so. But I also think ultimately, if it comes down to me discussing, is it a complete film or not? I think I just have to look at Into the Spider-Verse, because Into the Spider-Verse to me feels complete. This feels like half. And it's just the ultimate idea of like when Into the Spider-Verse ended, Into the Spider-Verse has teases ahead. But those were like, you know, stingers, like a Marvel tag at the end. But I felt like it encompassed a full complete story.
I think I get what you're saying. There are too many open threads by
it's
the
more
end
like
of this
a
one.
Season finale than a.
Oh, yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
It's definitely the feeling.
There it is. Yeah. You just nailed it.
It's serialized, you know, and is definitely serialized. All right. So to that end, we're all looking ahead to Beyond the Spider-Verse. And I want to bring up a topic that I started focusing on today, which is the reality of Beyond the Spider-Verse actually hitting its March 29th, 2024 release date.
This
is less than a year after. We've been hearing nothing about the fact that Across the Spider-Verse took 4 to 5 years for them to get it to this point.
But they were doing this in tandem, right?
No one will confirm. Like, we asked the directors, whether they were working in tandem. They
no one will talk about it.
Daniel Pemberton, we asked him, hey, were you working on your music at the same time? They did not want to talk about it.
Yeah, I think there's more to that story. Sorry to cut you off.
Well,
but
why would you
even set that up as an expectation if you're you're not going to turn a whole movie around?
There was also a story today about Hailee Steinfeld saying, I saw it on Twitter,
they haven't recorded lines. And if the SAG-AFTRA strike happens on July 1st, they will not be around to record any lines for the third film.
So that's a curveball. That's a curveball that they couldn't predict. You know, sure. if SAG goes on strike, then yes, that's something they're going to have to factor into. But
also don't rush it. Like, we waited 5 years for this amazing sequel. I can wait. Like, if they push, like, look, yes, would it suck? And it's kind of cool knowing that, like, oh, we only have to wait till March to get part three, but I'd rather wait and have it be awesome than them try to just rush it to meet a deadline.
What's like, Christmas what next year?
Matrix Avatar Reloaded.
Sorry.
Yes, there's Avatar. Another Avatar. And I think something else that's massive.
I could see them pushing it to a holiday.
Somebody said summer 2025, and I think that makes more sense.
Well, dude, summer, 2025 is just going to be epic in terms of superhero anyway. Isn't that Batman Part 2 and
Superman 2025?
Yeah, Superman Legacy is 2025. That could be a really cool.
Batman 2, I think, is October, from what I understand.
But still, just 2025 in general.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be pretty big, but I am going to be not surprised if we get the announcement that Beyond gets delayed.
Sean, back to Gabe's question. What is the thread at the end that you can't wait to see what happens expanding Beyond?
The one that I want to, I hope that they don't hurry through it and that we spend more time in it, is this version of Earth 42 where there isn't a Spider-Man, where Miles the Spider was supposed to be there and was supposed to bite a Peter, and that Peter died, and that's why Miguel was furious, you know, that the spider didn't get there. And so now there's a world where it looks kind of, you know, Escape from New York-ish, and Miles becomes the Prowler instead, and we don't have a Spider-Man. And I would love to spend a lot more time. Like, I think that's a classic plot twist at the end of a movie where you meet yourself and you're the evil version of yourself. Mm. Like, okay, that's fine.
Oh, I want to meet evil Kevin.
Little bit of a trope.
Evil Kevin is he hates movies shot on film. He's like, digital. No one overrated hack. Yeah.
I look at Michael Mann's Collateral and go, this is the greatest looking movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Done shit.
So that's the world I want to spend more time in. I really hope that they don't just shuffle good Miles out of that universe. I want to see him
feel like that's such a part of the cliffhanger that it would feel cheap to just rush through that.
Oh, sure. So the biggest question we're left with, at least in my opinion, is whether or not, because so the setup basically is he can either save his father or save the world, essentially, is the concept, right?
Well,
that's the thing, is that's kind of a false premise in that that is all on the fact of that's what the Spider-Man story is. But Miguel says you were never supposed to be Spider-Man. So he, in a theory, can do whatever he wants.
Spider-Man is dead because of you.
Yeah, and that's fine. There are consequences that are going to come from that. But he could technically do whatever he wants to do.
Does he tell his dad, do you think?
That he's Spider-Man?
Oh, I hope so. I hope by the end.
I think he has to.
The scene when he tells his mom and it's not the right universe was...
Yeah.
Amazing. That terrific. Was honestly, like, I think I said this in the review, some of my favorite scenes in that entire film are with Miles and his mom.
Yeah.
Like there's a scene with him and his mom, which I think is a big part of the first trailer, where his mom tells him about this idea of like when the boy goes out into the world, please protect my boy.
Dude. Okay.
Just oh my gosh.
So let me tell you about bringing the entire family to a screening on Saturday night, and I have Michelle to the right of me and PJ to the left of me. And that scene comes up and I just start to see Michelle's shoulders shake
because
she is
God.
Sobbing and glancing over at PJ to not pull full attention to him, but to hear this story about you're growing up and I can't, you know, I want people to care about you as much as we do. And, you know, I want them to be as protective of you as we have been up until this point. And it's just, it's everything that we're at. It's everything that we are at right here. And I just saw Michelle's shoulders like trembling. And I was like, well, she's in 100% on this movie, so that's all you needed.
She's wiping tears and she's like, oh, 3 out of 5.
Yeah, yeah. It's half a movie.
But weirdly enough, with all the stylization and the action, that scene and then the upside down physics, like when Gwen and Miles are talking, it's the quiet moments in that film that really hit me, yep, to be honest with you. And like the physics, I saw somebody break down the physics of Gwen's face as she's upside down and like how her eyebrow goes up a certain way. It's really, the detail is so insane. But yeah, I know we're running out of time, but in terms of spoilers, so Sean wants to see what he said. Jake, where are you in terms of Gabe's question about the biggest thread at the end of what you're looking forward to with Beyond? I think we're going to get a lot more live action. I think Beyond's going to mean the Donald Glover, yeah, stuff and all the canon stuff. I think we're going to be blending in.
I really think that like the final shot of Beyond could be, because so much emphasis has been played on his Jordans, his shoes. I think the final shot could be maybe, because since they just announced a live action Miles Morales, what if the final shot of Beyond is a live action sneaker stepping out into the streets of New York? And that's how, and then just sort of announcing
Do they show the actor? Like,
I don't think they show the actor, because I don't think they have the actor yet, but they're just basically saying like that's the next step.
I mean, you have until a week before the movie comes out to shoot the actor.
Wait, can it not be Shameik? This is a big question. I know we have to dive in. We have to dive off here, but this is like a huge question that's happening on the internet right now, is who should play live action Miles Morales. And I know it's an age thing. I don't know how old Shameik is.
That's my only argument.
Okay, Shameik is 26 years old.
But he looks young.
He was commenting that Tom Holland just turned 27. So why can't, you know, if Tom Holland can play Spider-Man at 27, why can't he play Miles at 26? The problem is Cross solidifies the fact that right now Miles is 15 years old. He says that to his to his principal, and he's talking about how he wants to go to Princeton, and they're like, you know, at 15 kind of thing.
It's a little bit of a Dear Evan Hansen kind of thing, where it's Shameik, like, okay, he's definitely not 15.
I think people are thrown off because right now he's got like a big beard. I think, just shave. I mean, if you see him in Dope and stuff, like, he has a really youthful face. If he shaves,
the Tom Holland argument is actually pretty brilliant. That's actually pretty smart on his part, because if I'm Shameik Moore, so how does that work? So this Spider-Verse is not in the MCU, correct? This, or is it?
Well, they address the MCU, though. They address they show Toby. That happened with Doctor Strange and the Nerd on Earth 1999.
By the way, the Morbius, the cell phone, the Sony cell phone. Oh, I'd pay money for that.
What was that?
What was the line?
No.
Oh, you guys didn't catch so you remember Morbin time. You remember they re-released it and then it bombed again. They bombed the movie twice. Yeah. In the movie, they're swinging, and I forget. I think Gwen says something about, it's about Miguel's like vampire like stuff, and he says, a vampire good guy. I'd pay money to see that.
I don't think I made the connection. That makes total sense. That's so a Morbius good. Joke. I don't think I made the connection so though. Good.
Also, I love how our show started with the Jared Leto thing, and now we're ending with Jared Leto. Yeah,
the Morbius. The Venom scene played like it got nothing in our crowded audience when he's poked in and spoke with Mrs. Chen. I don't think enough people knew that that was the Venom world.
It took me a second to go, wait, is that the convenience store from Venom? I mean, we do this for a living. So that I could see that going over the heads of a lot of people.
I do want to say, I think maybe we'll get more live action, but I think what they mean by Beyond is how Miles is breaking the Spider-Verse itself.
Yeah, that's what the canon is what I'm fascinated in. I think the way that they use the concept of canon, which is something we've talked about, is brilliant.
Which means that the Sony Spider-Verse might fully wrap up a multiverse story where they break the multiverse and then rewrite it. And then they might do a complete three arc.
You
three
mean Michael Keaton of, meeting Jared Leto in the middle of the desert didn't get you going?
I can't. Like, look, like we gave a multiverse movie Best Picture, and we're giving multiverse movie probably best animated film next year. Can we wrap up the multiverse thing?
Speaking of rapping, we're going to have to. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes away the stakes, I think, the multiverse, but not in this movie.
Well,
though.
He's a vampire. He's a vampire.
Yeah.
Different stakes.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Much different stakes. All right. So that is our spoiler filled conversation on behalf of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Of course, we're going to continue to have coverage of this film throughout the rest of the year. We'll continue to track its box office and see how it does against Transformers.
Oscars, baby.
And then we have Flash coming up, which is a multiverse movie, and I weighed in on this on social media, and a lot of people backed me on it. I didn't mean it as a dig to Screen Rant at all, but Screen Rant posted their Flash review, and they were like, this just doesn't hold up to movies like Across the Spider-Verse now. And I was like, dude, you can't. Like, Flash had no clue Spider-Verse was going to be coming out at this time, and had no clue it was going to be as good. And don't compare everything to Spider-Verse now, because what's going to hold up? What's honestly going to be as good as that movie for the rest of the summer?
Although, and to Spider-Verse's credit, wasn't everyone doing the same thing for Super Mario like a couple of months ago? And now it's already there's a new goalpost.
Very true. Yes. Yeah. So, and then like Gabe said, the Oscars. I fully expect this to be an Oscar player, and I really, truly hope.
Best Picture. Let's be realistic. Like, give it a Best Picture nomination.
Best half picture. They're gonna create a new category.
Did Two Towers get nominated?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. And so did Dune Part One.
I know. I listen. You guys convinced me. I'm also, by the way, officially conceding on my Barbie Oppenheimer bet, because the last time we discussed this, I know we got to go. Here's why. Since we last discussed the bet, for in case anyone listening doesn't know, Jake and I had a bet about
breaking news.
This is breaking news. So Barbie is opening up against Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
And I offered Jake $1,000.
But what was the final bet was, and I think this is, people will appreciate this. It's $100 to the charity of the winner's choice.
Correct. And so I'll just go ahead and donate that today if you need me to.
Sean, there's going to be a puppy is going to get food because of this.
So lame.
But let me explain one thing real fast. So the day the Barbie trailer dropped, the first major trailer, not the 2001 homage, that was the day I was texting you. We were on the show and I'm like, guys, yeah, I think I understand now how culturally huge this is going to be. But since we last discussed this, Oppenheimer has now been confirmed as rated R,
yes.
And it's 3 hours. So again, while my argument was standing about Nolan and then the IMAX theaters, the R rating in the 3 hour time frame, I think I have to concede to Jake, because I can't see it happening. Now, I want it to. And maybe this is reverse psychology and I'm hoping it'll happen. But I just wanted to say that, I think that's not going to happen anymore. I think Barbie's going to destroy it, unfortunately. Not unfortunately. I'm very excited about Barbie and I love Greta Gerwig.
Yes.
I just, you know, I'm a huge Nolan guy, so.
We shall see. All right, Gabe wants to give us a quick update for the Blend game, which used to be played at this point in the show.
Yes, so the Blend game is not coming back. That is not the update, but we had a lot of great feedback from people who are going to miss the Blend game. And I think they echoed a sentiment that we all felt when we decided to say goodbye to it, which is that we really love the spirit of the Blend game and all the benefits of keeping the conversation going around movies that aren't necessarily just being released this week, or stuff that's, you know, an old gem that maybe you haven't seen before. And so at the end of the shows moving forward, we're going to do a version of the Blend game. Again, the spirit of the Blend game, to try to get you guys to interact with the show down in the YouTube comments specifically. Feel free to email us if you don't want to, you know, comment
or tweet. YouTube. Yeah,
that's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm going to push you to comment on the YouTube, just because that's a great opportunity for us to keep the comments positive and for you guys to interact with each other. And we can interact there as well, but you guys can interact with each other as far as recommending movies, talking about things. And so that might feel like the Blend game. It might feel different. We're going to have fun with it every week. But at the end of every show, we're going to kind of leave you with a central question to jump down into the comments and interact. The one that was suggested, which I think is a great way to kick this off, was a last hurrah for the Blend game. So head down to the YouTube comments and let us know what your favorite Blend game was. And if you have a favorite Blend game moment or, you know, we love hearing stories about, like, I found one of my new favorite movies because of it. So if anything like that, as a final goodbye to the Blend game, head down to the YouTube comments and let us know. And we're going to keep this up every week. We'll have something fun.
I love it. All right. That's us for the week. Jake is running out to something very, very exciting. We will talk more about that in coming weeks.
We will dial in on what it is that I'm going to do. Our destiny is that we will dial in. But luckily, I don't have to go to Indiana to see it.
Wait, You're actually just taking a shower with Dial soap. That's what you're talking about,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Exactly.
First time.
While listening to Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
All right. And then, as mentioned, the show is going to be in Pixar this weekend. So follow us on our social medias for photos from that adventure. All three of us are going to be in San Francisco. Gabe will be there in spirit. You can follow us at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, at Sean _ O'Connell, at Gabe Kovach. And the show, of course, is at Real Blend. Talk to you guys next week with some more exciting content. And until then,
the man who moved the earth.
I think you got to say Barbie now, Kev. I think you just conceded. You got to just say Barbie.
No. I'm still I'm still Oppenheimer.
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.